Netanyahu unleashed terror upon them. Within minutes, more than 400 civilians were martyred, mainly women and children, 1,000 or more injured, with no means to be medically treated. Reports indicate that the current military strikes are deadlier and wider in scale than the regular series of drone attacks Gaza has been experiencing during the weeks Netanyahu defaulted by violating the original ceasefire terms. In response to the current attacks, the Palestinian resistance Hamas has slammed the Zionist regime for disregarding its obligations by overturning the ceasefire agreement. The Israeli regime, which has repeatedly violated the ceasefire that went into effect on January 19th, sought to fabricate new terms in an effort to justify blowing up the deal entirely. Analysts point out that since January, Netanyahu has waged a campaign of sabotage and provocation, openly violating the terms of the agreement by hindering and outright blocking the delivery of aid into the Gaza Strip. While food and other supplies were permitted to enter Gaza throughout the first 42 days of the deal, Israel refused to allow almost any of the 60,000 mobile homes and only a fraction of the 200,000 tents to enter Gaza. Though Netanyahu has sought to blame Hamas on fake charges of undermining the ceasefire, the reality is that he imposed a total blockade on any aid, including food and medical supplies, to the Strip and resumed its policy of using starvation as a weapon of war. Recently, the Zionist regime also cut off the electricity supply to Gaza, forcing a major desalination plant to slash its water output, severely limiting the amount of drinking water available to 600,000 people in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis. Hamas is known to have adhered to the agreement and was keen to maintain it. But Netanyahu, looking for a way out of his internal crises, preferred to reignite the war at the expense of the blood of the Palestinian people, Hamas said in a statement. According to a Haaretz report, Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani demanded immediate international action to compel Israel to implement an immediate ceasefire, abide by the Gaza ceasefire agreement, and return to negotiations. That the demands by a key member of the mediation team are exclusively directed at Israel confirms the fact that, contrary to Netanyahu's claim, it is not Hamas that has violated the agreement. This view is reinforced by media reports that the Hostages and Missing Families Forum has denounced Israel, not Hamas. A spokesperson is quoted in Haaretz: "The greatest fear of the families, the hostages, and the citizens of Israel has come true. The Israeli government has chosen to give up on the hostages." Indeed, Netanyahu's right-wing terror thugs, Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, have not only welcomed the renewal of scorched-earth policies, but gleefully exclaimed that the plans were prepared weeks ago. Their excitement at the slaughter of innocent mothers and babies reveals more and more approval. It confirms that Israel had no intention to honor the agreement and had plotted to blame Hamas to justify the current savagery. Since the inception of the ceasefire in Gaza 60 days ago, the Palestinian resistance and responsible organizations have meticulously tracked repeated violations of the agreement by the Zionist regime, says the Palestinian prisoner network Samedun. At the same time, in order to protect their people, the resistance has not once violated the ceasefire agreements nor retaliated against the Zionist war criminals. Ezzat Arish, a founding member of Hamas political bureau, stated, The enemy will not achieve through war and destruction what it has failed to achieve through negotiations. Trump's greenlighting of the Zionist regime's bloodbath makes him directly culpable in a series of war crimes, including genocide and ethnic cleansing. By having facilitated the wave of airstrikes, by arming and funding Israel, as has been the practice of his predecessor Joe Biden, Trump has proven yet again that far from being a peacemaker, he is a warmonger. Alon Mizrahi sums up the devastating news of a renewed genocide, immediately followed by harrowing images, as a tsunami wave of shock, disbelief, and pain.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
South Africa's iconic freedom fighter and first democratically elected leader Nelson Mandela once remarked, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians." So how can the International Quds Day be utilized as a strategic platform to further Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and work towards realizing his dream? And to discuss the International Quds Day and Africa's support for the liberation of Palestine, we are joined by Dr. Feroz Osman. He is the executive member of Media Review Network. We are also joined by Hassan Loget. He is the co-founder of Media Justice Africa. The International Quds Day is observed annually on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. Established by Imam Khomeini in 1979, this popular occasion serves as a global expression of solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle against the Israeli apartheid regime and its ongoing atrocities. Quds Day has united voices worldwide in support of Palestine, and today, Africa has emerged as a formidable resistance force against the Israeli genocidal regime. Despite intense U.S. pressure and Israeli attempts to infiltrate the continent, Africa's resistance continues to strengthen. Countries like South Africa, drawing from their own anti-apartheid struggle, are at the forefront of resisting the Israeli apartheid regime. South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice further cements Africa's role as a leading advocate for Palestinian liberation. Africa is proving that solidarity with Palestine is more than symbolic. It is a firm commitment to dismantling the Israeli apartheid regime. So how can the International Quds Day be utilized as a powerful platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his call for justice into meaningful action on the global stage?
Africa backs Quds liberation.
Each year on the International Quds Day, large-scale demonstrations take place across Africa in support of Palestine. Home to one-third of the global Muslim population, the continent sees hundreds of thousands joining the worldwide movement advocating for Palestine's liberation. A participant at one of the demonstrations held in the coastal city of Mombasa in Kenya speaks here on the importance of standing with the oppressed people of Palestine.
"We should not be ashamed to stand with the oppressors if our hearts are burning. But we keep away from the people who are oppressed, we can't even raise the voices, then shame on us. We have one thing left on us, and that's our voice. And if we come out, we should claim this occupation no more, and not say Israel is a free state, but Israel is a no state.
observance of the International Quds Day, established in 1979 by Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, has become a global tradition of marches and conferences advocating for the Palestinian cause. His appeal for global solidarity continues to resonate worldwide. Africa is part and parcel of this international movement in support of Palestine. Now, let's start off with Dr. Firoz Osman. How has the International Quds Day contributed to raising awareness about the Palestinian liberation struggle across the African continent?
The Iranian Revolution in 1979 was a true revolution. In other words, many of the other revolutions that have taken place did not remove the institutions and the deep state. For example, what happened in Egypt. You know, it lasted a year and then it was overthrown again. And the old systems and their controllers came back in power. So it is probably in recent memory, the only true revolution. And it is quite remarkable for Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah Alayh, that in 1979, he already declared Al-Quds Day. It showed their determination to free the third most holiest shrine. And it is a day that has been commemorated now ever since 45 years or plus. And it has created a global phenomenon, not only in Africa, as we mentioned, but throughout the world, where Palestine has been brought up into the map. Many others are gaining, given under the current circumstances, what is happening in Gaza, that they are getting courage from what has been happening in Gaza. There is no doubt that, you know, it is Iran that stands against the world system that wants to occupy and oppress people, and it is the Palestinians in Gaza that is fighting the same phenomenon with a great deal of courage, looking to Al-Quds for their liberation, to all countries that are helping them. And in fact, you know, it is the protest marches that began right in Iran in 1979 that continues till this day.
Thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Now let's bring in Hassan Loget. At the 30th African Union Summit held in Addis Ababa last February, African leaders took a strong position against Israel, denouncing its assault on Gaza as genocide and demanding a halt to all cooperation until the Israeli occupation ends. Now, how does Africa's steadfast support for Palestine pose a significant challenge to Netanyahu, who has spent the past decade working to expand Israel's influence across the continent?
The 38th African summit, the AU summit, held in Addis, was very significant because it suggested for the first time that Africa was uniting once again behind Palestine. We have to go back many decades, I think in the early 1980s, when the Organization of African Unity was at its height, trying to create a program for the liberation of the African continent from colonialism and apartheid, that they made a statement in the founding declaration of the African People's Charter, African Charter for Human and People's Rights. And that charter, also known as the Banjul document, was very, very instrumental in putting Zionism as one of the targets. And I wanted to quote a little bit of it. The charter basically said they wanted to achieve the total liberation of Africa, of peoples which are still struggling for their dignity and genuine independence, and undertaking to eliminate colonialism, neo-colonialism, apartheid, and Zionism, and to dismantle aggressive foreign military bases and all forms of discrimination, particularly those based on race, ethnic groups, color, sex, language, religion, or political opinion. So it looks like this was a victory for the progressive forces led by South Africa and Algeria.
Ties between the Israeli apartheid regime and the African Union significantly worsen after Israel's assault on Gaza in October 2023, which led to mass atrocities and genocide, resulting in the deaths of over 50,000 Palestinian women and children. Across Africa, people have gathered in massive numbers for rallies in solidarity with Palestine, especially during International Quds Day. These demonstrations impacted the African Union's policy decisions.
The African Union is pivotal. It is important for increasing pressure on the Zionist entity. If we recall way back in 1973, most African countries, almost all bar one or two, broke their ties after the oil embargo in support of the Palestinians, in support of the Arab world. However, the Zionist entity's aim is to bring about a change in Africa, in the African nation states, through the observer status in the African Union. We know a year or two ago that South Africa played a pivotal role to remove the Zionist entity from its observer status in the African Union, despite the fact that some of the African Union member states wanted Israel to be present. You see, what the Zionist state does is to use its soft power, its technology, its military, where they bribe and blackmail and try to influence the African nation states to support Israel against the Palestinians. And this is where again, the Iranian Islamic Republic of Iran has played a important role. It is also important for other Muslim nations to be aware of what is happening in parts of Africa and to help the African nations to ward off the soft power that the Zionist entity is using.
Many African countries are actively forging stronger ties with global powers that challenge Western dominance, such as China, Russia, and Iran. These alliances grant them greater political leverage, enabling them to take more independent stances on international matters, including the Palestinian issue. The evolving geopolitical landscape has played a key role in further isolating Israel's apartheid regime in Africa.
Where you find Israel, you find conflict. And I think that the countries that want to turn away from conflict have to find a path of peace and are looking for other ways. In the Sahel region, a number of countries have kicked off the leadership military alliances with France. But as I pointed out earlier, we need to negotiate new terms of engagement and relationships with countries like Russia. And so that we do not find ourselves a few years down the line with someone that we cannot live with. We need to live with countries that will affirm African values so that Africa can use its own minerals for its betterment. And we can't replace one set of dictators for another. So yes, getting France out has been strategic, but Africa must renegotiate its terms of engagement with other countries on its own politics, its own agenda that's African-centric. And Kwame Nkrumah was very, very clear that Africa's got a long way to build a United States of Africa where all our resources could be used to uplift our own people.
The comparison between the Israeli regime policies towards Palestinians and the deposed South African apartheid regime has been made by both scholars and political leaders. Now, Dr. Osman, this is for you. In what ways do you see these parallels playing out today, particularly because Western powers, which once supported the apartheid regime in South Africa, are now backing the Israeli apartheid regime?
South Africa under apartheid is exactly the same as apartheid in Israel. And this is said very clearly by our first president, Nelson Mandela. It was said by our moral voice in South Africa, Bishop Tutu. In fact, they didn't say it's exactly the same. They say what is going on in Israel is worse than what has happened in South Africa. that the apartheid there is worse. And we can see it from the genocide. In fact, the Media Review Network commissioned a book, and it is entitled Why Israel? The Anatomy of Zionist Apartheid, a South African Perspective, where it makes very clear the parallels between what was under apartheid in South Africa and what is apartheid in Israel at the moment. And in fact, it's become so obvious that it is no longer a debatable issue. The reason for the support of Zionist apartheid is that the same countries that supported white apartheid racism in South Africa are supporting the Zionist Israeli state, such as Germany, United States of America, Great Britain, France. All of them supported white South Africa until it became untenable, until they could no longer control it and could not stop it. So these are the same racist, white settler, colonial regimes that are supporting Israel today. And in fact, we can see that what is going on with the Trump administration today, that it is white settler colonialism.
Well, thanks for that, Dr. Osman. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on Africa's solidarity with Palestine as we mark the International Quds Day. Stay with us.
Africa backs Quds liberation.
In late 2023, South Africa filed a case at the International Court of Justice over the Israeli apartheid regime's genocidal war on Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Ron Lamoda, the current South African foreign minister, speaks here at the ICJ, where he led his country's legal team while serving as the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. Let's take a listen.
Thank you, Madam President, and distinguished members of the court. It is an honor for me to stand here in front of you on behalf of the Republic of South Africa on this exceptional case. In extending our hands across the miles to the people of Palestine, we do so in full knowledge that we are part of a humanity that is at one. These were the words of our founding president, Nelson Mandela. This is the spirit in which South Africa acceded to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of Crime of Genocide. In 1998. This is the spirit in which we approach this court as a contracting party to the convention. This is a commitment we owe to the people of Palestine and Israelis alike. As previously mentioned, the violence and the destruction in Palestine and Israel did not begin on the 7th of October 2023. The Palestinians have experienced systematic oppression and violence for the last 76 years.
Well, South Africa's case at the International Court of Justice has been described as both a legal and moral stance against the genocide in Gaza. Now, Mr. Logan, this is for you. How significant is this moment for South Africa's history, given its own past with apartheid, and how does it shape its role in global justice and human rights advocacy?
We have to find whatever means possible preserve a sensible system in the world, a system of equality amongst nations, so that the rule of law, international human rights law, can actually prevail. At present, Trump wants might to rule, not justice, might. And I think South Africa is correct in building these alliances. Our ambassador was declared a persona non grata in America, and Trump has basically asked him to leave the country. This is Ibrahim Rasool, for simply speaking at a web conference in this country, Mistra, where he basically said that Trump and him are fearing the increasing numbers of black and brown peoples in the world, in America, that are beginning to have influence. And he implied that they were trying to preserve white supremacist politics. None of that is untrue, but he's chosen to punish South Africa. So Trump and him are being vindictive, not only to South Africa, but anyone who dared to oppose them, even people in his own party. But South Africa is being bullied. Unfortunately, there are a number of people in our country who actually support Trump, and they happen to be from those who are privileged, happen to be largely white.
Julius Malema, the leader of South Africa's Economic Freedom Fighters Party, frequently takes part in demonstrations backing the Palestinian resistance. In this speech, he expresses his support for Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement. Let's tune in.
What type of government do we have in Israel that goes and bomb a hospital where people have run away for refugee, where people are sick, where children are there, where pregnant women are there? You bomb a hospital and you say you are looking for Hamas, but you are killing innocent children. There is nothing wrong Hamas did. This folk tongues and people speaking in parables and we don't know what they are hearing, what they are saying, it's wrong. When you are oppressed, the only option you have is to fight. And that's what Hamas is doing. They are fighting for their freedom. Mandela did the same thing, took up the guns and fought for the freedom of the people of South Africa. When you are oppressed, you only have one option. Confront the enemy and shoot to kill. Do not kiss the enemy.
South Africa's liberation hero, Nelson Mandela, became known and respected all over the world as a symbol of the struggle against apartheid and all forms of racism. He was steadfast in his support for the liberation of Palestine. He famously stated that, "We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians."
Mr. Loggett, you have the last word. How can events like the International Courts Day be leveraged as a platform to advance Nelson Mandela's vision of a free Palestine and turn his aspiration into a reality?
When the late president, liberation hero Nelson Mandela, said, "Our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of Palestinians," he basically drew inspiration from the time when the ANC in exile was trained and supported by the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It was a unity built in the trenches. And when he went to America, they tried to ask him to disassociate from Arafat and the PLO and Fatah. And he said, when days were dark and friends were few, only Palestinians, Libya, and other countries stood by us while others ignored us. And really, this is the message of Sumud, as the Palestinians say, the steadfastness that Iran and other countries, the Houthis, Lebanon and others, have been very principled in their support for Palestine. Cuba too, they want nothing in return. They support it not because they desire critical minerals, as Trump wants, from the Ukraine. They support it because they believe every nation has a right to determine its own destiny. Every nation has a right to self-determination. And we have fought a long battle, and we are still continuing given the nature of our settlement, and we want to lend a hand so that Palestine one day can be a truly independent state of all its people.
Well, thanks a lot, Hassan Loggett and Dr. Firoz Osman, for your incisive analysis. And now we welcome you on Palestine as we mark the International Courts Day.
Search for my roots in this soil, this holy land. which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, now I offer my son to you. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby. Somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen Wassalatu wassalam ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursaleen Sayyidina Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad.
The month of Allah is the month that we are developing our connection to God. In this month, when we enjoy the different du'as that we read, the different salats that we do, the different prayers that we do, when we read the Holy Quran, we have a enjoyment that we didn't have during the other months. Now, this connection to God, we were talking about how it gives us life. It gives us the true essence of human life. According to Aristotelian logic, humans were defined as haywanun natiqun, animals that could speak, animals that would think, and their speech comes from their ability to think. But one of our philosophers and one of the mufassirs and commentators of the Holy Quran said that this is problematic, that human beings should be defined as this, hayyun muta'allihun, that human beings, once they're created, they will live eternally. There's a hereafter for them. And that second of all, the differentia is that humans are muta'allih, they are connected to God. Therefore, for a person to be a true human being in the eyes of religion, it is a human being that is connected to God. And we see this in the traditions. We see that if we were to obey God, God would give us some of the same powers that He has. In some of these traditions, it says, Abdi ati'ni, my servant, follow me, obey me, aj'aluka mathali or mithli, and I will make you similar to me, I will make you like me, meaning that the same powers that God has, with His permission, He will give it to the humans. Meaning that mankind, when he becomes close to God, when he becomes alive and he reaches the different stages of being alive, at the end he will become similar to God. He will have the powers of God. So why should we limit ourselves? Why should we only limit ourselves to a material form of being? If human beings have such a potential, isn't it not right for us to limit ourselves to a very low form of life, a very low form of hayat? When we look at other traditions, we read, "Ati'ni fima amartuk, aj'aluka taqulu li shay'in kun fayakun." Follow me in what I have commanded for you, and I will make you say, "Be and it is." This is one of the verses of the Holy Quran. Be and it is. Allah commands something and it is. So human beings have this potential to reach a very high level of power, even though we're not searching for this power, but this is showing you the potential of humans. Another thing that when you think of life and this connection, it brings for us absolute joy. How many of us complain that we are not enjoying ourselves? We're not having, you know, a good life in this world. We've seen many of the prophets, many of the scholars, that when they have connected to God, once they have true life, no matter what troubles and tribulations life might bring them, they are still very happy people. Why? Because they have the greatest form of enjoyment. They say, once you reach this form of enjoyment, which is lidhat, which is this connection to God, which is this enjoyment, they cannot compare this to anything. For example, in the traditions, we say from Imam Ali alayhi salam, إن أطيب شيء في الجنة وألذه حب الله. What is the most beloved thing in heaven? What is the greatest joy in the hereafter? The narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam says, loving God and what? وحب في الله. والحب في الله, meaning that loving in the way of God, loving those that God loves, loving Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam, loving his family. These two things are the most important enjoyments in the hereafter. The hereafter is the world, is the realm where the realities of things are open for us. So if live that true enjoyment, it's connecting to them, loving Allah and loving His prophets and loving their successors, we understand that also in this world there is this love, there's this enjoyment. And many of us have felt this during the nights that they have cried for the Prophet, cried for his progeny, and they have connected to them, they feel a great, immense sense of love and joy for them. And then if you ask them, can you change this? Would you exchange this for anything that you have in this world? They'll say, no, we would not. So for us, inshallah, in the remaining days and nights of the month of Ramadan, we want to enjoy life, and we understand that this is the critical part in the definition of human beings. And then this is the way for us to truly enjoy our life and for us to overcome all the calamities and tribulations and problems that we might face. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ahla baytihi tayyibina tahirin.
قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله إن أعجز الناس من عجز عن الدعاء.
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله said, Verily, the weakest person is the one who is incapable of supplicating.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله ما لنا رب سوى
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله ما لنا رب سوى
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi, and Assalamu alaikum to all of the dear listeners of this program, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, this program, Let's Recite the Quran, consists of several Quranic parts. First, we are going to talk about a famous Quran reciter. Then, we are going to listen to a recitation by that reciter. After it, Brother Muhammad will analyze that recitation. So, please stay tuned. Today we are going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Muhammad Saddiq al-Minshawi. He was a prominent Egyptian reciter who was very fond of Sheikh Muhammad Rifat, and he was greatly moved by his recitations. Moreover, he was fond of listening to all of the reciters of his time. In his free time, he would tune into different radio stations to listen to the recitations of different reciters. Sheikh Muhammad Saddiq al-Minshawi, in addition to various recitations, recorded a compilation of the whole Quran in both Murattal and Mujawwad styles. Now let's listen to Sheikh Muhammad Saddiq al-Minshawi reciting Surah Ash-Shu'ara, verses 63 to 68, preceded by its English translation. Let's enjoy it.
كتاب الله كتاب الله كتاب الله.
In the name of Allah, the absolutely merciful, the especially merciful. Then we revealed to Moses, saying, Strike the sea with your stick. And it parted, and each separate part became like the huge, firm mass of a mountain. Then we brought near the others to that place, and we saved Moses and all those with him. Then we drowned the others. Verily, in this is a sign, yet most of them are not believers. And verily, your Lord is truly the Almighty, the Most Merciful.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, you're listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was a recitation of Surah Al-Shu'ara, verses 63-68 by Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq Al-Minshawi. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Yes. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, Sheikh Muhammad Siddiq Al-Minshawi began his recitation with Maqam Bayati. The first time he recited verse 63, it was in Maqam Bayati. The second time was in Maqam Nahawand, and he continued his recitation in this Maqam until the end of his recitation, which was verse 68. And he was reciting in Hafs, then he used the method of Warsh an Nafir. But like we've said before, most of the rules of tajweed across the different qira'at and riwayat is the same for the most part. There are some differences, but the basics are the same. For example, we have the same makharij of huruf. There's no difference in the places of articulation. Okay. And the manners of articulation are also the same. We have ikhfa, we have iqlab, we have ilhar, and idgham. These are all the same across the riwayat and qira'at.
Both vowels and consonants have the same?
Yeah, they're the same. Because it's Arabic, so just sometimes the rules are different.
Sometimes I think the vowel changes when taqlil happens, for example.
Okay, yes. The vowel does not change. The way that the vowel is pronounced changes. And this is only for fatha and aliful mad.
Mm-hmm.
In warsh, we have something called taqlil, which is something which is in between a fatha and kasra, even though it's more like a fatha.
So the manner of the articulation of the vowel changes.
Yes. For example, in warsh, Musa is pronounced Musa. Musa. Mm-hmm. And even in, we have another qira'ah, Hamza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the two riwayas of Hamza, they have a lot of imala. Imala means that it's halfway between fatha and kasra.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, for example, in the word adaraka, we have adarika. This is imala.
That's okay? Right.
It sounds in between, it's like a vowel which is in between a fatha and kasra. It's a lot more inclined toward kasra than taqlil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have these differences. But like I said, most of the rules of tajweed are the same. Let's go over them.
So let's talk about common rules.
Yes. And I like how Sheikh Minshawi pronounced the lad in the phrase anil-lrib. You have to hold the lad whenever it is sakin without qalqala,
mm-hmm.
while applying istitala and tafkhim. This is really difficult. If you say anil dorib, that's incorrect. It's not anil dorib. You have to say anil dorib.
Mm-hmm.
You have to hold the lot a little bit. Just like how Sheikh Minshawi pronounced the lot. Then we have bi'asaka. Bi'asaka. We have
sod.
Tafkhim of the letter sought in all the riwayas.
The highest level.
The highest level of tafkhim because it has aliful mad.
Mm-hmm.
Tafkhim of the letters of isti'la are pharyngealized. Okay, we have seven letters of
isti'la.
They are, we have sod, lod, ta, wa, qaf, kha, and the ghain. These are seven letters of isti'la. They have to always be pronounced with tafkhim.
Mm-hmm.
At varying levels of, you know, the level of tafkhim could be different depending on the vowel and or sukun. But we always have tafkhim.
Okay?
Just the level might change.
They always have thickness and the raise of the tongue.
So how do we apply tafkhim for the letters of istila? We have pharyngealization. The root of the tongue raises toward the pharynx.
Mm-hmm.
All.
In addition to the actually body of the tongue sometimes.
Yes, for the four letters, sad, lad, ta, and wa, we have itabaq. Okay?
Yes.
And this includes velarization as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another rule, which is it's actually very unusual, is the word firqin. Even though the ra is sakin and preceded by a letter with a kasra,
mm-hmm.
in Hafs an Asim and most qira'at, you have to pronounce it. Actually, I think you have a choice in Hafs. I'm not sure. But you could definitely pronounce it with tafkhim. Okay.
Yes.
It's more common to pronounce the ra with tafkhim because there's a letter of isti'la after the ra.
That's right. Another example.
Firqin.
Another example might be qirtas.
Yes. And another one, Surah Al-Fajr, we have mirsad. Yes. And the qaf of this word has to be pronounced with the lowest level of tafkhim because it has a tanwinul kasr.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's right.
Firqin kattawd. And then we have ikhfa. So up to now, it's the same in all qira'at. We have ikhfa in the exact same way across the different qira'at and riwayat.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines, dozens of Palestinians, including women and children, are killed in fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza. A medical charity expresses concern over the sharp rise in preventable skin diseases among children in Gaza amid the worsening water crisis there. And the U.S. presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching around 20 attacks on Saada and Amran. You're welcome to our studios here in Tehran. Thank you so much for joining us. More Palestinian civilians fall victim to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza as the regime continues to pound the blockaded territory with air and artillery strikes. At least 8 Palestinians, including women and children, were killed after the Israeli warplane struck a residential building in Jabalia, north of Gaza. Fatalities were also reported after Israeli forces opened fire on Palestinians in El Mawasi refugee